Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross is at the controls today, and Carissa's answering the phones, and we're looking forward to connecting with you on a topic that I think a lot of us are familiar with, or at least maybe have an opinion on, or certainly know of a circumstance or situation. I think we remember several years ago, Rick Warren came out with that the best-selling book, The Purpose-Driven Life. That was, you know, sold 40 million copies. So he did a, I think a follow-up version, or maybe it was the one that came before that. It was The Purpose-Driven Church.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was a very helpful resource. Today we're going to talk about The Preference-Driven Church, which hasn't sold nearly as well. But it actually probably is more pertinent around much of our nation and maybe around the globe. So we're going to talk today about the church. And I don't know. Have you ever? Do you watch the medical shows on TV?
Somewhat, yeah. All the CSIs and things like that.
So you interested in autopsies at all?
Well, there's a lot to choose from on the TV in that regard right now. They even have the live experience at the Mall of America. You can go and be one of the CSI people, I guess.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to talk about the autopsies today, but not really, not like CSI. I don't think so. But today we're going to talk autopsy of a deceased church. And the subtitle of the book is 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive, which is, of course, what we want to focus on here in Connecting Faith, how to apply biblical principles to daily life situations. Certainly the church needs our attention in many ways. Thankfully, Tom Rainer has studied this and written about it, and he's going to advise us in the next few minutes. Tom is president and the CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources, and it's one of the largest Christian resource companies in the world. He's been a pastor, a researcher. He's written more than 20 books, co-authored the number one bestseller, Simple Church. We talked with him not long ago about his book, I Am a Church Member, which is just a short little book, but very powerful and impactful. And this is another one. It's not a large book, but it has some great insight, and I know it's something that would benefit you. If you want to sign up for a copy, in fact, we've got 7 copies to give away. So, and this is a topic I think that many people are well aware of, dealing with struggling churches. So great insight today coming up from Tom. And if you'd like to sign up for a copy of that Autopsy of a Deceased Church and 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive, you can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Tom is a graduate of the University of Alabama, has a Master of Divinity, PhD from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and he's pastored and written a number of books, and we're glad to have him back on Connecting Faith. Tom, good to talk with you again.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for putting up with me one more time. You guys are gracious to me.
We had to wait till after all the annual meetings were done, and you were still able to speak coherently, so we thought we'd go ahead and do it. So.
Yeah, you gave me about 3 weeks to 4 weeks after, so I'm mostly healed at this point, so I should be okay.
Which is, it's funny but probably sad in some reality. But we'll maybe get to denominations a little bit later on. But so let's talk about Autopsy of a Deceased Church, pretty provocative title, and maybe we should just talk about what do we actually mean with the term deceased and dying church.
Well, let's start off with a very clear meaning of what a deceased church is. A deceased church, for the purpose of this book, is a church that has literally closed its doors. It no longer exists. The church that once was is no longer. And the reason, of course, I use the word autopsy, it goes back to something that my late parents told me, that my sister, who predeceased my birth, died, and my dad asked for an autopsy immediately. And that, back then, I guess many, many years ago, that probably would have been 62, 63 years ago, they let him stay in the room during the autopsy right after his little girl had just died. And the question was asked of him, why did you want to perform an autopsy on Amy? Why did you want to see this? And he said, I had to find out so that I could let my family members know and my future family members know. And the reality of it is they found a heart defect, and now all of her family has been checked for that. And indeed, we've had two who have had open heart surgery who've come in line with that, and that autopsy helped us to know what to be looking for. So I know I'm taking the metaphor too long, but the bottom line is we did these autopsies in a figurative sense to find out why they died, to help other churches to be healthy in the future.
You've, over the years, have been involved in kind of consulting work as a church consultant and church growth speaker, and written, of course, on this topic sort of time and time again. So I know you're well connected with the churches around the nation. But give us a sense, maybe just an overview. I mean, do we accurately have any way of knowing how many churches die each year? I mean, we hear statistics, but is that really true?
Well, I can give you almost any statistic you want. There will be very few of them that are true, but we can try to guess what the number of deceased churches are. First of all, let's begin with the base. We estimate, and again, we don't even know this number, but we estimate there are about 350,000 Protestant churches in the United States, and we're estimating that, again, these are good estimates, but they're not precise. We're estimating that 10 churches are dying a day, probably in the 4,000 to 5,000 range, or maybe even more than that. And we see the pace beginning to pick up, where it will probably be 15 to 20 churches a day within the next 3 to 4 years.
Mm. And is this something that is it a rural issue, urban, suburban? I mean, is it geographic?
The answer to the question is yes.
Okay.
That it is all of the above. Neil, there was a time that you could pinpoint churches that had closed their doors basically by demographic realities. One of the more common would be a white flight church, where a church was in a all Anglo community and African Americans, or some ethnic group moves in and the whites move out and the church dies because they don't want to keep a presence in the community. That was the more common death of a church up until about the 1990s. Today, it is not just rural. It is not just urban. It is not just suburban. In fact, if you begin to do a sampling of where churches are dying, you cannot find a particular pattern. You cannot find northeastern or northwestern versus Bible Belt churches. You cannot find urban versus suburban. It is endemic across all demographic lines, and it's endemic across denominational lines, non-denominational lines, and geographic lines.
Now, we know there are always church plants going on all the time, and not all of those sort of succeed. So is this included maybe in these statistics as well, a group that gets together to start a church and it doesn't develop?
Oh, yeah. Yes. This would certainly include the failure of churches. If they do become churches and they end up dying, they would be included in this number. But again, that number is not a high percentage, and I'm not going to conjecture a percentage, but I know it's not half of them. It's probably not even a third. But there are, yes, for certain new church plants that will die within 5 years. So, yeah, there's early death, and then there are those who have been around for a century or even more than that are dying as well.
And maybe before we get into some of those characteristics of, I'm wondering, is this, I mean, you pastored several places around the country. Is this maybe something from personal experience that you wrote this?
I didn't kill a church.
Okay. Right. Well, I thought we should clarify that right up front.
Maybe some of my church members thought that I was killing them. I served as pastor. My first church was in rural southern Indiana. The total membership was 7. The vote, it was a congregational vote to call me, and the vote was 6-1. So even with 7 people, I could not get a unanimous vote. That can give you an idea of how inept I was as a pastor and a preacher. From there, I went to a bedroom community of Louisville, Kentucky, and it was in a bedroom community that had once been a rural community, but the mindset of the church was rural, not urban or suburban or bedroom, and so we had to deal with those issues. Then I went to a church in Pinellas County, Florida, where St. Petersburg and Clearwater are right across the bay from Tampa, and that church was highly, highly influenced by secular culture, by a large unchurched population. And then I ended up at a classic suburban church in Birmingham, Alabama. So I've seen all of the cultures, and that's an exaggeration. I've seen many of the cultures of churches up close, and I've seen many more in the hundreds of churches that I used to consult with. Don't do that as a vocation anymore. My son, Sam Rayner with Rayner Research, does that, and he will let me tag along every now and then, and that keeps me fresh. But we are seeing it in all kinds of churches, and I've seen it personally. I've seen it from a consultative relationship, and I'm also, quite frankly, I love pastors, and I love those who serve on church staffs, and through my blog and through my podcast, we're hearing from them daily about their situation, some of them challenging and some of them celebratory.
Well, we'd love this hour to be encouraging and maybe challenging as well, especially to pastors or members of perhaps smaller churches or churches that seem to be in decline, and I'd like to know how can we keep ours alive, turn it around, and become not just surviving but thriving. And we're going to get more into that in the moments ahead as we talk with Tom Rayner, who's the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources, and he has authored 20-plus books, including the latest Autopsy of a Deceased Church, 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive, and it's from B&H Books. And we look forward to talking with you about it as well. And you may have a story, you may have a question. Maybe you're on a church leadership position, and there's been some challenges, and you're wondering, is my church susceptible? We'll get some answers to that. And we do have copies of the book to give away. It's 7 copies of this great little book to put in your hands. So if you want to just sign up for the drawing in that, or like to join the conversation, we welcome that. 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484.
Inspiration and hope.
Find Prayer Works at myfaithradio.com.
Build your kingdom here. Let the darkness fear. Show your mighty hand. Heal our streets and lands. Set your church on fire. Win this nation back. Change the atmosphere. Build your kingdom here.
It's 17 past the hour. Talking today with Tom Rayner from Lifeway Christian Resources. He is the author of the new book called Autopsy of a Deceased Church. And over the 2-3 decades that Tom has been involved in pastoring or church consulting, he's discovered some consistent themes among churches that have died. And we want to review those today. I guess maybe before we do that, Tom, Jesus said, the church will prevail, right? The gates of hell will not prevail against it. So should we even be thinking that churches would actually die or have autopsies for deceased churches?
Well, the universal church will never die, and there will always be a presence of local congregations. Of that, we are absolutely certain. The battle is won. The victory is secure. And so we will never say that we are defeated. The reality of it is the manifestation in universal church, local congregations, the little C church, some will live and some will die. But I got to tell you, Neil, I am an obnoxious optimist about churches. I am an obnoxious optimist about local congregations. And even though I have been a purveyor of some of the negative news about what's taking place in our churches, particularly in our American churches, I'm really hopeful. I'm hopeful because I'm seeing a lot of emphasis on new churches. I'm seeing a lot of emphasis now, more and more, on church revitalization. And I'm seeing this millennial generation, this generation of over 78 million young men and women, even though they're in the minority Christian, really, really wanting to make a difference. So despite a dire title, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, and despite the fact that I can probably give you a few pretty dismal statistics, I really think that there's a lot of hope. And it's been kind of fun going on the journey, finding out where God's really doing some great things and seeing that it is not a hopeless situation.
Hmm. Well, and maybe that's the other side of it, too, because even though there are some that are not surviving, there are others that are thriving, and maybe we need to talk about that as well. I mean, I guess I think about my church just continues to grow and apparently thrive, and it seems like there are many others that are in that same situation.
I recently did a blog post at TomRainer.com on what I call Dream Again Churches, and I talked about churches that had really gotten pretty close to death and had turned around and reversed, or some that were on a precipitous decline, but now are doing well by most any metrics, or subjective or objective. And I said, any of you part of those churches, send me your story. I tell you what, God's not done with the church. It was an incredible avalanche of stories that came in. Let me tell you what God is doing in my church. Let me tell you how dismal it got, and then things turned around. So I am focusing a lot of attention on unhealthy churches that are now healthy, because that's providing me a lot of information about what God is doing. And that's as helpful as doing an autopsy on one that has deceased to find out how God has turned around some unhealthy churches.
We'll share some stories as we go along. But you suggest in the little book, there's 12 maybe factors that seem to be bringing about the downfall. And I'm wondering if we can kind of summarize those and then dig in a little deeper to these. But is there one that maybe tends to lead the way, or one of first importance, that if this happens, it sort of is the domino that gets all the others going?
You know, I think you are incredibly intuitive, and I don't mean any false flattery, because at the beginning of this show, you referenced Warren's book, of course, 1995, The Purpose-Driven Church came out, and it was later followed by Purpose-Driven Life. And in that context, you said, Tom Rainer has written The Preference-Driven Church. Now, I know you meant that tongue-in-cheek, but I actually have a chapter in Autopsy that I know you saw there that's called The Preference-Driven Church. And I guess, and maybe it's centrally located for a reason. I don't know if I'm smart enough to have just centralized it for a thematic reason, but that chapter is right in the middle of the book, and I think it speaks volumes to everything else that is going. It is this: when church members and leaders begin to focus upon what I need, what I want, my preferences, my desires, I think everything else begins to follow. Because what are the two greats that we're supposed to do in Scripture? The Great Commission. We're supposed to go and make disciples. Great Commandment. We're supposed to love others. And so all the two greats of Scripture are looking beyond ourselves. So anytime a church and its members begin to be inwardly focused on its own needs, the other dominoes begin to fall.
I guess we do need, though, to, I mean, everybody has a preference, right, for a worship style, or, I mean, I guess even color of the carpet, right? I mean, that's not a bad thing, is it?
Preference is not a bad thing. A preference, when it supersedes, though, our desire to make God's church a place that He wants it to be, when it supersedes that, that's when we become preference-driven. I have my own preferences. I have my preferred style of music. I have my preferred approach to preaching. I even have my preferred architectural style of church. But that does not mean I let that dominate and take precedent over everybody else in the church.
Well, it gives me back to one of the questions I want to talk about. We alluded to earlier that you've been in denominational meetings here a few weeks ago, and a lot of denominations have their annual meetings in the summer, and, you know, those are probably less attended than they used to be. But is there a role that denominations play in maybe a church's demise or their success?
Well, first of all, I think we would have to begin with the truth and the veracity of Scripture. I believe if a denomination, depending, of course, upon how the denomination is structured and how it's organized and how autonomous the churches are, but I think the first concern is if a denomination begins to move away from the truthfulness of Scripture, away from the belief that, say, Christ is the only way of salvation, and that filters throughout all the churches, then the denomination is playing a role, a significant role, in the demise of local churches. Now, in more congregational churches where the denomination does not have top-down authority, which is the case in my denomination, the greatest level of authority is in each local church, the same thing can happen within the local church. But denominations can be great assisters as well. They can help in the process. They can provide resources. They can provide research. They can provide a macro view. They can provide consultants. They can provide people to help. They can provide resources. That's one of the things we do in my organization is provide resources. So, yes, a denomination can be a hindrance. In fact, they can be the seed toward the demise of churches, or that they can be a great help. They can go in either direction as well.
Well, and I guess we obviously are aware of several significant fights going on in terms of denominations regarding theological stances, right? So the local congregations are saying, well, I can no longer affiliate with this group, and it gets into property issues and, you know, what we really believe and affirm. So that's different than, I guess, you know, a dying church that's sort of slowly eroding.
Yeah, slow erosion is endemic, is common in many of these churches that are declining. I gave the story in my book about going to my hometown, and as your listeners probably can detect, I have a southern accent. I sometimes facetiously say I grew up in L.A., which is Lower Alabama. Growing up in Lower Alabama, I was in this small town in South Alabama. And after my parents died, I did not have any family that still lived there, so I had very little reason to return. In fact, most of my friends had moved out. And there was a decade, if I recall correctly, between my visits there. And in that decade, the town had just declined so significantly that I was taken aback. Stores that were once thriving were shuttered. Traffic was almost non-existent. And I went to a local merchant, a couple of years older than I am, who had lived all of his six decades in the town. And I just asked him the question, what has happened to this town? And he looked at me and he said, what do you mean? The reality of it is he had been there every day, 365 days a year, for over six decades. And the decline was gradual. It was imperceptible to him. I had the vantage point of a decade of times that I had seen the town. That's what's taking place in most of the churches that are dying, Neil. It is not this great cataclysmic event where all of a sudden the church was averaging 150 and now it's averaging 25. It's usually the slow process that those who are there and those who love the church do not see because it's so incredibly gradual.
So, I mean, I suppose there may be a portion that refuse to see the decline, but maybe there's others that just aren't aware of it, right?
I think both groups are there. And I got to say, when I used to do consultations on a regular basis and still do research on churches, they're filled with good members. They're filled with people who love our Lord and who want the best. There will always be a few stubborn folks that just refuse to change. There will always be some who can see the change but don't do anything about it. But most of the time, they don't see it. And when they do see it, it's this wake-up call. And sometimes that wake-up call can lead to some great changes.
So we're talking a little bit about some of the factors that can lead to, or maybe that are consistent among churches that have died. It's in the book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive, from Tom Rainer. Tom is now president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources, and he's been a pastor for a number of years, a church consultant, and has authored some 20-plus books. This is the latest. We have some copies to give away, too, seven or so copies. If you'd like to sign up for one of these, just a little 100-page book that can really offer some hope and perspective for you and your church. And we'd love to have you join the conversation, too. And you can remain anonymous if you want, or maybe you're a pastor of a small church and you're feeling like perhaps you're in that category of a slow erosion. You'd like to get some help. Give us a call, 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can drop us a note online, myfaithradio.com. Then go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, myfaithradio.com. Check on Connecting Faith, and we'll talk more with Tom Rainer in just a moment.
900 KTIS. But if we are the body, why aren't his arms free?
22 past the hour. Talking with Tom Rayner today, who's president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. We talked to Tom before. He's written a number of books. The latest, called Autopsy of a Deceased Church, and the subtitle is 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive. And it's from B&H. It's just a short little book of 100 pages or so. We got some copies to give away, by the way. You can call in and sign up for one of those, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, or join us on the broadcast as well. I'd love to hear your story and maybe how what God's doing in your church, how it's turned around. Maybe you were in a slow decline or slow erosion, as we talked about, but something has changed. We'd love to hear the story and celebrate that. And, Tom, we talked about some of those 12 factors that seem to be consistent among those churches that have died, actually closed their doors. Slow erosion, you talked about preference-driven versus purpose-driven. So what are some of the other factors? Let's review those.
There is an author that wrote a lot more books than I did on the church named Lyle Schaller. And Lyle Schaller would often ask this question to a congregation. He'd say, "What year is it?" Now, it would seem like a strange question to ask, because if you were asking that question today, you'd say it's 2014. But he would ask the question, "What year is it in the church?" In other words, what is the fondest memories that you have? Now, there's nothing wrong with having fond memories, but have you gone from revering the past to worshiping the past? Do you think that the only days are the good old days instead of the present and God's future? And there's some churches that, and again, we do not want to change those things that are biblical, but sometimes these contextual cultural things, we just, in some of our churches, hold on to them and we refuse to let go. And the culture around us changes so rapidly that we become irrelevant to the culture. And as a result, the past becomes our hero. So one of the early chapters in the book gives kind of a quick overview of that. When I was a pastor in southern Indiana, I loved that little church. It was actually birthed in the 18th century. And my kids and grandkids may think I was the founding pastor of that, but I'm not quite that old. That was a little church that had seven members in it that I mentioned had a vote of 6-1. And when I preached my first sermon, one of the elderly ladies, as I began to preach, just screamed at the top of her voice, "Turn on Jesus, turn on Jesus." I didn't know what was going on, and I tried to preach on, and she kept on yelling, "Turn on Jesus, turn on Jesus." And I just stopped, and the entire deacon body came up next to me. His name was Merle, and Merle comes up to me, and he whispers something in my ear, and then I realized what's going on. It had become the accepted tradition in that church ever since they had electricity that the pastor, before he preached, would plug in a frame that framed the likeness of Jesus, and the light would go on, and thus Jesus was turned on. So I had absolutely no idea how to turn on Jesus until she screamed it out in the service, and that was one of those old traditions that they held on to. Now, the good news is that little church of seven became a church of about 70, and you know, in several months' time. But it was a great story of a church that revered the past but was ready to move in the present for the Great Commission and the Great Commandment.
But I suppose if you're kind of focusing on the good old days, that what does that tend to be? Is it about worship styles typically, or is it become, you know, who the founding pastor was, those kinds of things?
Yeah, it's really the big three, and you hit on two of the three. One of them is worship style. The other was an ideal pastor. And by the way, the best pastor that most churches have is a former pastor, and they remember him more endearingly than the present pastor. And then the third one is something about the facilities. So it may be a particular room. It may be the worship center or sanctuary itself. But those are the big three that tend to be where people have some of the most sentimentality. And I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't. I mean, I remember where each of my three sons got married, and each of those places would be sentimental for me. I remember the country church in L.A., Lower Alabama, where my wife and I got married, and that has great affection for me. So it's not that it's wrong that we have sentimentality. It's wrong, though, when it hinders us from moving forward and reaching people for Christ and ministering in His name.
You talk about facilities. Let's expand a little bit on that, because obviously we ought to take good care of our facilities, right? But is emphasis on the building a bad thing?
It can It can go one of two ways. So we can neglect the building where it gives the impression to those on the outside that we do not care. I am certainly one to say that we should have neat facilities and we should have well-marked facilities. And up to a point, we should definitely make certain that our facilities are in good shape. But it can go the other extreme. There can be an obsession about facilities. During this process of researching for the autopsy, it was not a huge quantitative research project. It was interviewing a few people who had been a part of now deceased or closed churches. I actually got to go into one of those facilities. The man who took me into the facility was able to get into the gate where it had been gated off. There was no other people were occupying it, and no electricity was on. He turned on a flashlight, and he said, "I want to show you where the problems began." And he takes me around, and he shines a light on one particular room. It was a parlor. And he said, "We began a big church fight over who could be in the parlor, who could meet in the parlor, who could not come to the parlor." And he said, "That was the beginning of the end." That is an obsession over facilities.
Just because somebody had donated the furnishings or something, or just
someone had donated the furnishings, and family member photographs were on the wall there. So the donor family had put their family photographs on the wall, both living and deceased family members, and they became the controlling force of who could go into that room and who could not. It erupted into a major church fight that ultimately led to the demise of the church.
So, I mean, we probably have to talk about leadership then at some point, don't we? I mean, this isn't a pastor, but it's a is it church leadership not addressing it, or is it church leadership instigating maybe some of those fights?
There, you know, Neil, there are going to be cases of any of the above. You're going to have cases where pastor leadership and other leadership is a precipitating factor in this. You're going to have cases where the pastor has done everything he can and the church still resists. You're going to have key power groups within the church that could be a part of it. There is no one singular pattern, but yes, certainly leadership, lay leadership, pastoral leadership, staff leadership can be precipitating factors, but it can go further than that as well.
Going back to property, what happens after property after a church has died? I mean, what typically happens? Are they closed up, gated up, as you mentioned in your example, or are they sold as museums or houses, or what typically happens?
You know, I wish I had a precise answer to that, and I do not have a well-researched or well-thought answer, but I will say this. I have seen more churches become bars and entertainment places that were once churches than any other thing. Now, I don't know if that statement would stand with vigorous research, but I've seen a lot of that. But let me talk about what can happen with churches, and if they're on the edge of declining toward death, what they can do. One of the honorable things that can happen with churches, if they truly understand that their days are numbered and they're going to close, we have a dearth of facilities relative to the number of people that would like facilities for a church. In other words, we got a lot of new churches that cannot find facilities. And many of the dying churches simply abandon them, maybe sell the property. Sometimes the property is razed. Sometimes it is used as it is. But it's rare. It is rare that it is used for another church. One of the honorable things to do is to take the church and find a healthy church that is willing to come in and use the property for a new witness in the community. So it's basically a death with dignity and then a new church that starts. I am a member of a church in South Nashville in the Brentwood community. And my church currently has 6 campuses. And all but one of those campuses were churches that actually called our church and said, "Can you come in? We're about to die. We need another vibrant church to come in and to be a witness in this community." so far, in every case, what was once a declining or a dying church has now turned around into a vibrant church. So one of the honorable things to do is, if you know your church is dying, to be willing to find, let the property go to some other witness that may take another opportunity to reach people in the community.
As opposed to a mosque or a, you know, a museum or a dance hall or something.
All the above, exactly. Yeah, yeah. All the above. I was involved several times, Neil, in court cases when I was a church consultant over churches that were trying to expand and the municipality would not give them the zoning permit to do so. And I would come in and testify for the church on why they needed it. And that is just simply to say, we have a shortage of facilities. And please, if you're in a facility and you think the church is about to die, please prayerfully consider letting another church witness come in there.
Good insight from Tom Rayner. Today we're talking about his latest book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, and the 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive. We're kind of reviewing some of those challenges and opportunities there with Tom, who's the CEO and president of Lifeway Christian Resources. He's authored some 20-plus books, or co-authored many more, and has been a pastor and a church consultant for a number of years. And we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more. We'll follow the money. We'll get some advice for pastors and church leaders, maybe feel like they're in a church that's in a decline, and talk a little bit about the stages, life stages of pastoral tenure, all those things. We do have copies of the book to give away. If you'd like to join in the conversation, it's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH.
Have our hearts weekday afternoons at 1:30.
Lord, for your church, we come to pray. Show us your will. Teach us your way.
Talking with Tom Rayner today about his new book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. It's how do we keep churches that are maybe in slow decline or maybe rapid decline to become not just surviving but thriving. And certainly prayer is one of the factors you address, Tom. Just say a word about the key aspect of prayer, the missing aspect of prayer in declining churches.
Yeah. There are several things that we can go back, Neil, and look at churches that have once died, and we find out why they're no longer existing, and that's why we call it the autopsy. And it was absolutely fascinating to talk to some of these leaders and to hear them talk about the role of prayer. They didn't say that the church stopped literally praying. They said, yeah, we had, I would call it more perfunctory prayer. But what they were missing were those times of real imploring of God, intercessory prayer, when they came together corporately. They said, we got to a point where we would have a list of people who were sick and we'd pray for them and maybe a few missionaries. Now, I'm not making light of praying for physical needs or certainly not for missionaries, but it became more habitual. It became more check off a list instead of let's truly come together, much like the early church in Acts 2, and then again in Acts 6 in different places, the Jerusalem church and even beyond. There was not this sense of urgency of prayer. There was not this sense that they were coming together for what I would call meaningful prayer. And the turnaround would typically take place if the church did turn around. Now, of course, autopsy is about those who did not. The turnaround would typically come when someone, usually one person, it could have been the pastor, it could be someone else, got a burden for prayer and became a leader in what I would call a prayer movement in that church. And that's the good news about these church situations. Sometimes it's one person with an evangelistic heart. It's one person with a burden for prayer. It's one person to minister to the community. And that one person can be a living incarnational example of Christ that can help turn an entire church around. That's another reason why I'm hopeful. But to answer your question directly, prayer became more perfunctory and routine instead of real intercessory prayer imploring of God.
One of the areas you address is the area of money. I'm wondering if following the money is a good barometer for church health, and that sort of ties in with Frank's question, who's calling in. Frank, go ahead. You're on with Tom Rainer.
Yes, I'd like to know, Tom, in what percentage of the cases do you see disputes over money being a major division problem with the church?
Frank, it's a good question. I cannot give you a precise percentage. I can tell you that it does take place, and it is not uncommon. The dispute over money is a dispute typically over preferences. This is what I want done with the money, or this is where I think the money would go, and everyone begins to have their ideas. And so this falls back to the preference-driven church, and which is not a good connotation. So when you begin to see and hear of churches that are in monetary disputes, they are now focused inwardly. And if you are focused inwardly, you cannot be a Great Commission or a Great Commandment church. So even though I cannot give you a precise percentage, Frank, I can say that what you are asking is a good question and a common phenomenon in declining and dying churches. If the fight comes over the money, then you have a problem that is one of inward focus. Somewhat related to that, and Neil was speaking of this, is following the money. Where does the money go? And in declining and dying churches, more and more of the proportionate funds coming in go for things for the members instead of beyond the church, in missions, in outreach, in evangelism, in ministry. Again, not to suggest that we should not be discipling and taking care of our own members, but to simply say that you will see a pattern where proportionately the money comes more inward than outward. So it's a good question, Frank, and your own target, and what you're saying is endemic in many of these declining churches.
So is there you talked about a proportion shift. You've been consulting churches for many years and providing resources through Lifeway. Is there some guidelines maybe in terms of proportion or so that we maintain that outward outflow as opposed to just inward?
I'm reticent to give precise percentages, even though I said that I'm going to give some percentages and make myself a liar at the end of this. But I'm reticent to give precise percentages because building costs in a budget can change the proportionate makeup. If a church, for example, has a let's just use a hypothetical number, a $200,000 budget, and they have $20,000 that they pay in debt service, they're automatically using up 10% of their budget right there, as opposed to a church that has no amount of debt that they have to or building costs. So that's a huge factor in the percentage. But here's what I like to see, and I'm going to contradict myself, and my wife tells me I have the spiritual gift of ignorance and contradiction, so this is that latter gift manifesting itself. The percentage of 20% is something that I think is a healthy target. In other words, 20% of the funds are going outside of the church at a minimum, and it's a healthy target. Now, if someone says my church is only at 16 or 17 or 12 or 14, I would not declare it unhealthy because I'm imprecise in these numbers. But for a rough percentage, I would like to see 20% of all dollars that come in go beyond the needs of the church.
Say a word to a pastor who maybe is coming into a situation like that, and we should talk maybe about the life stage of pastoral tenure, but is it something where a clear look at the books is important before answering a call to pastor a church that may have things kind of out of perspective?
You know, I think, Neil, that we need a lot of full disclosure before a pastor goes into a church, and it works both ways. I tell search committees, make certain you do a legal search on him, on this prospective pastor, to find out if there's anything questioned. Do a financial background check and do a social media to see if the prospective pastor has embarrassed himself in any way in the past in social media. So we recommend all three of those on the pastor. And then from the church's perspective, I would say to any pastor, don't you dare go into that church until they've given you constitution and bylaws, until they've given you a few years of budgets and receipts, and some other critical pieces of information. Money is not everything. Structure is not everything, but they are things that you need to know, and I would recommend that strongly for entering pastors before they take on the church. And if I may say, and before time runs out, I wrote today about what pastors need to consider at TomRainer.com before they go into a church that needs a turnaround. So there are, I believe it was 9 different questions to ask before you go into a church.
That's TomRainer.com. It's T-H-O-M, TomRainer.com, and a great place to just keep connected with Tom and his writings. You know, there are probably many pastors or ministry leaders that are listening today that are in some struggling situations, and it wasn't as it was advertised. Yes, we, you know, come and be our pastor. We want to see change take place, and turns out that not everybody wanted to see change take place, at least what they were having in mind. So what's your encouragement to those that are maybe in those struggling situations?
First, you're not alone. We are a church made up of sinners, including those who lead the church, and so you're absolutely not alone. That's one of the things I try to communicate with church leaders. You're not in this by yourself. You are among many. Second, find a person within the church that can be a confidant, that can be an encourager, but that can speak truth in you. Third, do not neglect your spiritual disciplines. For if you are not connected with God, you're not going to be connected with the right leadership in the church. Stay in prayer every day. Stay in the Word every day. And then fourth, love your critics. I promise you will have them. Learn to pray for them and learn to love them. It will not be easy, but it will be possible through God.
You address some life stages of pastoral tenure. Is there a point where maybe it's pastors are more susceptible, or churches maybe are more susceptible to experience decline?
Yeah, usually right after the honeymoon, and the honeymoon may last a year. I'm finding more and more pastors telling me, "Oh, that year was a dream. I wish it had lasted a year. It's more like 6 months." Usually, the greatest period of conflict and challenges comes in the second or third year of a pastor's ministry, and that's when you find out the pastor's not perfect, and the pastor finds out the church is not perfect. You know, I've been married 36 years, and my wife discovered I was not perfect probably while I was still dating her, but even more so once we got married. It probably didn't take a full year to do so. And we have learned to work through our differences and our challenges and unconditionally love each other. The metaphor carries with the church. You're not in a perfect church, and you're not a perfect pastor. Expect these things to take place in years 2 and 3, and prayerfully and hopefully you'll come out on the other side.
Well, let's talk about, because I know the book talks about 12 ways to keep your church alive, working through the differences. It seems like if you can weather some of the early storms, there's a possibility of some good things taking place, right? How do we work through the differences?
Well, you know, Neil, the other side is very promising, and the average tenure of a pastor is about 3.5 years now, so they're usually leaving right at the tail end of a conflict period, not realizing that the good times or the better times are right ahead. And so I would simply say, understand that those tough times are going to come. Understand that they will be there. But keep the church moving outward. Keep it outwardly focused, and then you'll begin to see gradual but definitive change take place.
And I guess that really is, as you've said right at the outset, there is hope, because there are many churches that went through seasons of struggle and yet are vibrant and strong today.
There are absolutely many cases of hope, and we're going to highlight more of those. I've written enough about death and autopsies. My next project is called I Will, and we're going to write about churches that have done it.
So if you're listening today and you're in one of those churches really experiencing a turnaround and God's grace and the Spirit at work, why don't you connect with Tom and maybe do that online? That's probably the easiest, right, Tom?
Yeah. Just come anytime to TomRainer, TomRainer.com, and there's a way to connect with us there, and we'd love to hear from you.
And check out Tom's regular writing there. If you're involved in ministry in any way, you'll appreciate Tom's good insight on the church and how to see God continue to work mightily in our nation. Tom Rainer is the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources, And he's also a respected pastor and researcher and written 20-plus books. And the one we've been referencing, his latest is called Autopsy of a Deceased Church, 12 Ways to Keep Yours Alive, from B&H Books. Tom, always great to talk with you, and we just appreciate your willingness to come alongside us and guide us in a way that can be more more fruitful in advancing God's kingdom.
Neil, you're always kind to have me on, and I'm humbled and honored to be here. Thanks for the time.
All right. Tom Rainer joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show today or you want to pass it on to a friend or just to hear a portion of it again, you can always go to our website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. And we've got podcast archives, I mean, all our shows that will just really be encouraging you. You want to listen today for Live the Promise. Ann Graham Lotz is going to be on. That'll be powerful, with Susie Larson coming at 3 o'clock. And then tomorrow, we're going to talk about coming back from loss with Wayne Hastings. That's on tomorrow's Connecting Faith. We'll see you then.